This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, it came to, as no surprise to anyone that the Supreme Court agreed to the administration's request to put on the docket the Affordable Care Act.
That's right, Mark. And 26 lawsuits have been filed across the country since the Affordable Care Act was signed back in March of 2010. The appeals courts have ruled on six of these cases so far, and the Supreme Court decided to hear appeals from just one decision. That one came from the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in Atlanta, the only one so far to strike down the individual mandate.
Again, the individual mandate in the law would require all Americans to purchase insurance or pay a fine, and nearly all the lawsuits challenge the law's individual mandate. So the big question is, what happened to the rest of the law if the individual mandate fails? And the 11th Circuit Court said it could stand without the mandate, but the Obama administration has actually urged the Supreme Court to view the mandate as not severable from the rest of the law. That's, I think, very important.
And it looks like we'll know what the Supreme Court decides by the end of June, which is the end of the court's 2012 term. This decision is going to come after oral arguments in the spring and, of course, will have an impact on the election, we assume, which will be in full swing at that point. In other exciting healthcare news, the Obama administration has just announced a grant program totaling $1 billion that will award providers and organizations that work with patients in Medicare, Medicaid, and CHIP to come up with innovative and rapid ways to expand the healthcare workforce in new and different ways, not just the traditional healthcare providers that we tend to think of. And I think the quote is that it will favor innovative proposals that demonstrate the ability to create the workforce of the future. So a very visionary look.
It is. It's very exciting. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, CMS, is calling it the Healthcare Innovation Challenge. It's part of the White House's broader We Can't Wait agenda to bolster the economy after President Obama's job bill has stalled in Congress.
And on the topic of creative solutions for the healthcare system, our guest today has been experimenting with system science and information technology for years to create a U.S. system that's better coordinated, more consistent, and more efficient. Jeff Margolis, founder of the Trizetto Group, will join us today to talk about that vision and how they've done some execution for a better healthcare system. We're happy he's joining us.
We are, and no matter what the story, you can always find out more about our shows and hear about us by Googling CHC Radio. Today, Margaret and I are speaking with Jeff Margolis, founder of the Trizetto Group, a healthcare technology solution provider. His new book is called The Healthcare Cure, How Sharing Information Can Make the System Work Better, being released this month and published by Prometheus Books. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you, Mark.
You know, there are many books being released that talk about the U.S. healthcare system and lay out the problems from uncontrollable cost to poor health outcomes to fragmented care. And yet your book, as well as your work at the Trizetto Group since 1997, tell us that there's a solution, that the system is not beyond repair. And you call your plan the Integrated Healthcare Management System, and it sounds like a very powerful tool. And I noted in the back of the book you had, there was a reference of a study that had been done that suggested that using the system, you might be able to save the healthcare system between 20 and 30%. And you noted even on the conservative side at 10%, it would be about $72 billion. So that's an incredible system. And so maybe you could take a little time and tell us about your vision and how you might get all the key constituents in the healthcare family working together for making a better healthcare system.
Fundamentally, what everyone can agree on, Mark, is that if we can align incentives between us as consumers and the way we think about our healthcare, and that we're actively engaged in thinking about improving our health status, and if we can align physicians, who are the only ones allowed to practice medicine in the United States, by the way, and we can put them on a course where they are incented to undertake the conversations and necessary steps to make sure they're not just treating patients for illness, but taking care of patients' total health, then we can get to integrated healthcare management.
Jeff, your early life and your early career certainly had a profound influence on the work that you've done since with Trizetto, and you speak very frankly about the experience of being a patient with a very significant chronic illness. And you know, we always say that the doctor who has the same disease as the patient takes the best care of that patient. That kind of deep fundamental understanding of what's wrong is really a powerful lesson. And it gave you an opportunity to observe the healthcare system firsthand. But you also had deep training in system science and information technology and using those skills to solve complex problems in energy and banking and healthcare. What are the challenges that healthcare has in common with other industries, and which ones are really specific to healthcare that you had to wrestle with to get to your system of addressing the issues?
Well, I appreciate that question, Margaret, because, yes, my personal journey, of course, I think all of our personal journeys influence the way we think about life. I was both very unfortunate to be afflicted with a disease that is not a curable disease, at least not today, but we're working on it, called Crohn's disease. And I was diagnosed at a fairly young age. And what was interesting is that I was told that I would be facing challenges for my entire life, that there are very few things they understood about the disease, that the treatments were as bad as the disease itself, and that really makes you think when you're a 19-year-old, which I was at the time, about what things can you control in life and what mm-hmm. things can't you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as I studied information systems and technology and I learned a series of industries, as you say, I tried to see, if you look at the manufacturing industry, which can be very complicated mm-hmm. in terms of all the components and pieces and parts that goes into creating, let's say, an automobile like a Lexus. And you think about what portions of that process can be controlled. How do you solve quality issues? How do you keep costs down? And how do you make sure along the life cycle of such a product, can you really put the right tools and techniques into both the consumer's hands and, let's say, the mechanic's hands to make sure everything goes right. The truth of the matter is that, and I think it's the third chapter of my book is called The Lexus and the Human.
Right. I don't want to be a Lexus.
Right. Well, it does postulate the question of if something was wrong with you, which would you rather be? And I don't want to be a Lexus either. I like being an animate object, but I do think that it's ironic, isn't it, that mm-hmm. a car has an electronic record mm-hmm. that follows it around all its life, and we as humans only now are in sporadic ways are starting to get that level of comprehensive information technology applied to us. But what's the basic lesson? The basic lesson is if you don't understand all the pieces and parts to solve a problem, then you probably can't solve it. And the problem in healthcare is that the healthcare industry is so big. There's one, you know, it's over $2.4 trillion, you know, in the United States. It's 18% of gross domestic product. And if you know hospitals, if you're a hospital expert, then you know hospitals. If you're a physician of a certain type, then you're an expert at that type of medicine. If you're a pharmacist, and then you can imagine I can keep going through the mm-hmm. list here, you might know your piece or your silo very well. You might even have very good information about your piece, but how do you play that to the whole? How do you make that so that the total experience and process for you or me as human beings is better? And that's how you apply system science to healthcare, and this is how we come up with integrated healthcare management.
When we look at the systems that that seem to have the best lock on this, and we hear a lot certainly about organizations like Kaiser Permanente or the Veterans Affair, which has certainly earned itself a marker for quality, or group health. Certainly, the question is: really only those organizations in which the delivery of care and the coordination of care and the payment for care is managed by the same entity that will make those investments in not hiring the most super hotshot physician that graduated from Harvard this year, but maybe hiring five community health workers to go out and engage people, as you say, in taking their medicine, provide transportation, or at least look at that as equally important to achieving the ends. What do you see as the possibility that this is going to happen in a widespread way across America outside of those kinds of organizations that organize, deliver, and pay for the care all in one entity?
Yeah, well, I think it's an absolute certainty that it will occur. In fact, it is already occurring. You know, when you have what I call that physical overlay model, like a VA or Kaiser, which can be a very good model because, you know, I call it the Walmart model of healthcare. You can walk into a facility. Most of the things that you need are literally physically there. They've been purchased and procured at good rates, and you have access to them. And, of course, in that setting, there can be help in guiding you through the store, if you will. But just as Walmart's not the only successful retail model, Amazon.com is equally successful in terms of assembling all the pieces and parts necessary for a consumer to put together what they need and get it delivered to them, if you will, at a high value. One example would be a client of TriZetto's called CareMore, which is a health plan that focuses on frail and elderly Medicare patients. Medicare Advantage is the type of plan it is. And it started in California, actually in Orange County, and is now operating in about three states, recently purchased, by the way, by national healthcare giant WellPoint, who sees the value, Margaret, in exactly what you're talking about. And so I think it's absolutely a certainty that private health plans, or what I call also virtual health plans, in other words, health plans that don't necessarily own their physicians but contract mm-hmm. with hospitals and other physicians that are not owned but they're just affiliated, are going to start doing more and more of these things because the quality that you can produce is terrific and the cost at which you can produce it at is lower.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Jeff Margolis, founder of the TriZetto Group. He has a new book out titled The Healthcare Cure, How Sharing Information Can Make the System Work Better. Jeff, in your book you say that given the information technology that exists, there's no reason we can't engineer a healthcare system to give human beings care that is coordinated, consistent, efficient, and based on the best practices available. Unfortunately, it's not that easy in the United States, given the wide array of political differences, policy and financial barriers that have gotten in the way over the last century. So why do you think now is the right time to introduce this new management system? And can you give us some examples of inroads you've made in testing out your solution?
Sure. Well, the first reason that the time is now is because this problem is getting red-hot critical, and we can't sit around as a country playing that blame game anymore. We have to say, okay, let's get real about what's working and what's not working. And as you may have noted in the book, it's endorsed by both a very prominent past Democratic senator and a very prominent past Republican senator. Who both can agree on the concepts that if we design the tailored benefits for individuals, so, you know, Mark, Margaret, you and I all have different things about us, perhaps different income levels. We live in different places. We might have a different health status. You may have certain chronic illnesses. I don't. I may have certain that you don't. But certainly the technology exists to design a benefit plan that removes the barriers for me or you to get the care you need just because it makes common sense. In other words, if you have asthma and you need an inhaler, why would we create a financial barrier for you to get access to that, right? Okay, so that's the benefit side. The time is now. The technology to produce those tailored benefits exists. It's developed by the TriZetto Group. It's developed by other entities that have the capability to do this. Let's look at the reimbursement side. Everybody agrees. There's nobody standing up saying fee-for-service medicine, where we reward physicians for the volume they produce, makes any sense, as opposed to we need to start rewarding physicians for the value they produce. That value can be quality of outcome. So if you have a hip replacement or a knee replacement, certainly you want to be functional, right? You want to have range of motion. You want to be able to walk. You want to be able to get around. That's kind of simple to measure. But you don't want to forget little things like, oh, by the way, while you're doing that surgery, please prevent infection from occurring during the surgical process, because, in fact, the infection during one of those that might result can cost people much more time and missed work and pain and suffering, and cost the system a lot more money than just doing it right the first time. So everyone can agree on that, right? So best of benefits, tailored for individuals, following evidence-based guidelines so we provide the best of care, using information technology to bring those two capabilities together for you or me as consumers at the right place at the right time. Why wouldn't we start it now? It's going to save money, it's going to save lives, and it's going to change the dialogue from one of who is wrong and doing the wrong things in the healthcare system to how do we align physicians and consumers to do the right things.
Jeff, speaking of the time is now, we're living certainly in the era of the gradual rollout of the Affordable Care Act, the legislation of the Affordable Care Act, and we'll see that continuing over the next couple of years as the exchanges come up. But I have a question for you. Much of what you're talking about, we see elements of it embedded within changes at CMS and the Centers for Innovation, the Office of the National Coordinator, Meaningful Use, Prevention, Consumer Engagement. But I give you the chance, if you'd been asked to write one amendment to add on to the Affordable Care Act that you think would have significantly enhanced it or taken this work that you're doing to the next level, what would that have been? What was missing that would have really made it an even greater piece of legislation in your mind?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. I think I have it.
Did you write the amendment already?
Well, I didn't. But here's the thing is in the Affordable Care Act, which I think is very well-meaning, certain constituents were viewed as powerfully being able to affect changes in healthcare, most notably physicians. And certain constituents were pretty much ignored in terms of positive contribution and rather regulated more. And that, of course, was health plans and the politics being what they were at the time. If I could change one thing in the Health Care Act, which contains a net excess of $60 billion to help create improved electronic health records in physician office and hospital settings, I would have sprinkled in, let's take a low number, $5 billion, $4 billion to give incentives to health plans that have, by the way, tremendous historical data on consumers because they pay claims of what the consumer's historical diagnoses are, what procedures they've been done, where they were done, who the treating physician was, so on and so forth, and to encourage the development of personal health records that are populated by payer data to complement the electronic health records populated by clinical data. Then we'd be off to the races.
All right.
Jeff, we'd like to ask all of our guests this final question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovations, and who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, that's, to me, you know, innovation in healthcare needs to yield improved health status for individuals and populations at reduced costs. And so when you look around, I really think when people are trying to pay attention, first they need to understand that all systems in all countries around the world are not created equal, and the amount that the consumer feels or doesn't feel differentiates across the world. But I would say, let's not look too far from home. I already mentioned CareMore, a health plan that's operating in California, and I think Texas and Florida, if I'm not mistaken. There's a model. I think you want to take a look at Aetna and Cigna and United Health Group and see how they're working to bridge payer technologies to help assist physicians and hospitals. Take a look at Care First, which is a Blue Cross Blue Shield plan in Maryland that's undertaking what I would call advanced medical home initiatives, where the physician is, in fact, the quarterbacking a team, taking total care of consumers, and the incentives between that physician and consumer are aligned. And I'll give you one wild card one that I'm actually very involved with now as the executive chairman of a company called WellTalk, which is the emergence of how social media can better be used to engage consumers like you or me in what I call a new genre called social health management. We have a virtually untapped opportunity to take the resource of many, many people who have been through a lot of things. As you said earlier, Margaret, you know, if you've been through something, mm-hmm. you're in the best position to give advice on it. That is yet an untapped resource in unlocking the power of information technology. It's an untapped resource that contributes to consumer engagement and integrated healthcare management, and I think you'll be hearing a lot about that.
Today we've been speaking with Jeff Margolis, founder of the TriZetto Group, a healthcare technology solutions provider. His new book is called The Healthcare Cure, How Sharing Information Can Make the System Work Better, published by Prometheus Books. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today on Conversations.
My pleasure.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. This week's bright idea looks to a unique experiment in education that combines longer school days with increased physical activity. Don Community High School is a 157-student dropout recovery school in Cincinnati, Ohio.
I'm a true believer in education, and is that if you know if you have physical fitness and healthy eating, it leads to better academic success.
Principal Ramon Davenport doesn't just want the students to earn their credits. He wants to see them reach their full potential. And he believes that physical fitness is one way to improve academic performance and that longer school days are a means to keep teens out of trouble. This year, the charter school created the very first mandatory after-school program in the state. Don's Let's Move Academy, modeled after Michelle Obama's Let's Move initiative to get kids moving and eating healthier, requires 9th and 10th graders to attend a 12-hour school day. But that's not all. The program also incorporates tutoring, 3 healthy meals, and 90 minutes of physical activity for the students. Using body mass index measurements, blood pressure screenings, and physical fitness tests, the school is tracking whether the students' health improves and how this has an impact on their academic success. Linking health to education to activity to give some students who might otherwise fall through the cracks a chance to succeed? Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.